Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Grid sponsored by Gaper.io. Today we have Peter Livingston. Peter is the founder and general partner at Unpopular Ventures. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So Peter, brief background about yourself, what you've been doing prior to founding Unpopular Ventures.
Yeah, happy to share. So my background is almost all in startups and then more recently investing in them. I was an operator earlier in my career, went through a couple of companies, got lucky with one. I was one of the first three people at a company called iRhythm that it just worked. It's now a public company worth $2 or $3 billion. And I've also had failures. So I founded one that was a complete bust. We raised money from Kleiner Perkins, had a good run, built the product, but just everything went wrong. Wasn't the right team chemistry. We couldn't find product market fit. The business model didn't work. So we had to shut it down and lost all the investors' money. And it was really one of the hardest experiences of my life. But the funny thing is I learned more from the failed startup than I did from the successful one. So even though it was really hard, I'm very glad that I had all these different experiences. Starting about, 8 years ago, started angel investing a little bit, found I really liked it and it was going pretty well. Started very slow, did one investment 1 year, one investment the next year, eight the next year. And I was at GE Ventures at the time doing corporate venture. And I realized I just don't believe in corporate venture as a model. I think it misaligns incentives. It didn't fit with my values. And I decided to leave and really just try being a full-time angel investor. And over a period of about 5 years, I did over 150 personal angel investments all over the place, all over the world, different sectors, different stages. Found I continued to love it. Found it continued to go really well. That first fund, it's of my own personal angel money, is about an 8x fund. And so I did well enough financially that I was able to keep doing it. And people also started to ask if they could invest with me. And so 2.5 years ago, I created a syndicate on AngelList that I called Unpopular Ventures. Wow. And invited friends to back me. And that means I would find startups I'd invest in, I'd invite my friends to invest with me, and we'd be able to write the company a bigger check. And it took off like beyond what I could have even hoped. And so 2.5 years in, we have one of the biggest syndicates on AngelList. We have 2,100 angel LPs behind us. We've invested about $27 million across almost 100 companies now. So I think it's like 96 or 97 companies, some more than once. And it's more than just me. So I brought on one partner last year who's been absolutely fantastic. He was one of our LPs before, and now it's just an incredible part of the team. And we actually just brought on three more partners in the last few months who have also been really great. We're so lucky to have them. So we're behaving as a global venture capital firm. We literally invest everywhere. As we talked before this, we've made at least three investments in Pakistan. It might be four or five. I have to go and look, but we invest in India. We have about 12 investments in Latin America, a bunch in Europe, a couple in Africa, quite a few in Southeast Asia as well. So we really try to invest all over the world because we do think there are lots of customers that are underserved all over the world. And they're really fantastic founders that want to serve them with really important products. But there's a dearth of VCs that are actually want to invest in a lot of these areas. So we think there's kind of an arbitrage opportunity. So anyway, that's why we call it Unpopular Ventures. We want to go where most of the VCs are not looking. And we think that's the best place to both create things that are really important and also make a lot of money while we're doing it.
No, I amazing journey, you know, and more power to you. I really love the journey. I'm sure the listeners love the journey as well. So, you know, our sprint focused podcast, keeping them short, sweet, precise to the point. Last 14 months, crazy world, right? So if you go back in March, April, May, you know, if you read up news around the startup world, it was like VCs are pulling the money. If you're in early stage, you know, you're doomed. If you're not into health tech, raise as much as you can. The valuations are going to go down.
You know, it's funny. So yeah, happy to talk to that. So we were actually fortunate to really kind of see it coming pretty early. And I actually have posted a blog post that I've written about it, where we kind of saw how important and catastrophic this is going to be. I didn't see that the economy would rebound so fast, but I did believe that, you know, good startups are always good investments. And in fact, when people are afraid and when there's a downturn or when things are kind of shifting and behaviors changing, that's often the best time to invest. And the nimble little startups can often take advantage of changes in environments much better and faster than large corporates can. So I felt that it was a very good time to invest in startups. We leaned into it. In retrospect, I think we actually got in on quite a few really good companies at very attractive valuations. And it's funny, like our metrics for 2020 investing are actually unbelievable. Like a lot of those companies have already gotten marked up at much higher prices by good VCs. And I think that because we kind of lean into it, we've been fortunate to do pretty well. Certainly, it hasn't been good for everybody. Some startups that are much more brick and mortar or physical product focused or kind of really entrenched in kind of the in-person way of doing things have had a very hard time. But most tech stuff that is kind of, which was already trending to more online, more e-commerce, more business over the, you know, through the cloud and everything, a lot of those companies have seen a huge boost. And so it's funny, on balance, I feel like, you know, I like, obviously the pandemic wasn't a good thing. It really hurt everybody and I wish it didn't happen. But for a lot of the types of technology businesses that we invest in, it was actually a blessing for them, really, in terms of accelerating their businesses.
So, you know, so another topic around, okay. So during that time, what top three pieces of advice you were giving to your, you know, company, startup founders, you know, how you were guiding them? What kind of advice you were giving? Top three advice.
Oh, well, I mean, I really can't take credit for anything that our companies have done. We provide the money and we kind of get out of the way. And we do our best to just really invest in smart people that are kind of going in interesting directions. And all the success that they've achieved is really, it's all them. And I don't think any advice I gave any of them was that helpful. Maybe I kind of tipped them off how catastrophic the pandemic would be a little bit. But I think most of them already knew. And I think smart founders are always kind of trying to skate to where the puck is going and looking at how behavior is changing. And, you know, some of them didn't have to do anything and just got a huge boost in their business. And then others had to kind of pivot. And I think the smart founders were like, there's one in particular that really made an incredible pivot through COVID. They saw their business go to zero. You know, their business is doing okay before that. It didn't feel like it was really taking off. It crashed because of the virus. They pivoted business models and that new business worked 10 times better than even their prior one did. And they've just taken off like a rocket since then. So great founders are always looking for that next pivot, that next evolution to take advantage of. And when all of consumer behavior is changing at one time, it actually presents a really big opportunity. The big, large corporate behemoths can't move fast enough to capitalize on that, but oftentimes startups can. And so it's actually a great time to be a startup.
True. So true in that regard. So another question around co-workings, remote work, hybrid, you know, till September 2019, WeWork, the world was all about WeWork, right? Then the WeWork debacle started happening and then the pandemic came. Now everyone is kind of like in the mode of, okay, hybrid, remote, whatnot. So how do you see the world evolving? Do you see the world becoming more localized through internet, or is it still a global village where one coast has an advantage over the rest of the world?
I do think the world has forever changed. I think that people are still experimenting with different approaches and we don't know exactly how it's going to play out yet. I see some companies pulling for people to come back into the office. Some are doing the opposite, saying you can work from anywhere, we'll be remote forever, and even creating policies that promote that. Some are doing something in between. And I think we're going to see a reshuffling of talent in a lot of different ways. And I think that, you know, maybe we'll end up with all these different things, but I would bet that kind of most people are going to kind of converge around one thing that seemed to both be most beneficial. I think what it'll converge around is which companies created the policies that the very best employees wanted, and they're going to excel and execute well because they have the best people with them. And then everyone else is going to look at what they did and mimic them forever after. I would bet that this is going to be, I think we're going to end up with a very remote centric approach going forward. It does so many good things for people. So both employees can work from anywhere. They don't have to be in, say, San Francisco to work for a tech company. They can have a much lower cost of living, better quality of life. And then also it's good for the companies because they can reach better talent globally. You know, they don't have to all fish from the same pool. The challenge, though, is that there's going to be much more competition than there ever was before. And so maybe mediocre employees that got this high-paying job in San Francisco just because they were there in that pool and, you know, there's so much money and hiring and everything and not enough good people, those people are probably going to be replaced by somebody in, say, Pakistan or China or India who will do the same job better and for less money. And so I think the world is going to become more competitive than it ever has in the past.
True, true. Last question, Peter. Your own personal productivity hacks, you know, during the pandemic, what changes you've brought into your own life to help you function better, be more productive, get rid of all of these Zoom fatigues, you know, your own.
So first, a hack that kind of came before was just, you know, I started angel investing almost only on Zoom or just video conferencing. Probably started doing that like 4 or 5 years ago. And I just found it was a huge time saver. You know, you don't have to commute, you don't have to park, you don't sit in traffic, you don't have to then like get into the conference room and block a whole hour and then like, you know, chit chat back and forth. And then it's like what the actual meat of it, it might be 15 or 30 minutes. And, but you spent maybe 2 hours just to commute back and forth. And so I do think just already doing stuff on Zoom is so much more efficient. But then you mentioned Zoom fatigue. And the other thing is I actually do very few meetings. I say no a lot. I think a lot of people just agree to lots of meetings and they have a hard time saying no, and they sit on Zoom all day and it is exhausting and you have very little time to think and do productive work. And I have found that it's good to just say no a lot and preserve your time. So, there's not more magic to it than that.
Yeah, I forgot one question, you know, so that was vetting deals over Zoom, you know, because many of the VCs, many of the investors are finding it difficult to do it. So, you know, how do you judge a person to invest in them over Zoom?
Yeah, it's tricky. It is definitely kind of a different formula than maybe a conventional VC has. Like I remember when the shift happened into COVID, a lot of VCs didn't know what to do. They felt it was so important to have that founder come in and shake their hand and look them in the eye and like see into their soul or something like that. And the funny thing is like most VCs don't actually have very good returns. You know, there are probably 20 or 30 firms that do consistently put up good returns, but like they're not extraordinary either. And so it's not clear that this system that existed in venture capital before everyone started doing Zoom decisions was all that good. And people were attached to it because that's what they did before. But I think that for me, where I'm investing completely online, I actually, a lot of my judgment has less to do with the vibe that I get from the person. And much more to do with the qualitative facts that I can pull together. So who are they? What did they do before? Who are kind of, you know, what have they achieved in both in their past experience and what have they already achieved in this business that's tangible and numerical? And then also it's very helpful if maybe there's some people they knew from before that either provide a reference or even better are investing in their current company. And so they're kind of just a lot of sort of facts that have nothing to do with feeling that you can kind of pull together to determine, does this seem like, you know, an objectively good investment or not? And at least for me, I don't think it's actually that important to kind of get a vibe or a feeling from somebody, especially for us where we're pretty hands-off investors. We're trying to find really good people building really important companies that just need the money and want to run with it. And you know, sure, we're here to help and we can some, but really we're here to give you the money and get out of your way. And so we don't necessarily need to have this great chemistry forever after. We just want to figure out who are the best people and companies to bet on.
No, that's a good answer. That's a good answer. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. You know, we would love to have you for a longer episode. We do our every 6 weeks, we do a webinar. So when the relevant topic comes up, we would like to have you on that. But for the podcast, it's goodbye for now. Thank you so much for being on the show. Take care of yourself and stay safe.
Sounds great. Well, it's been my pleasure and looking forward to doing the longer one. Thank you very much. And we're